Welcome back to SBS Spice, where we dive deep into the stories behind South Asians shaping today's culture. You're listening to Dilpreet, and our culture maker today is singer-songwriter Dee. Growing up in Western Sydney, Dee has become a sensation in India's playback singing world with the most watched Tamil song, Rowdy Baby, racking up an astonishing 1.5 billion views on YouTube. Born to a Sri Lankan father and an Indian mother, Dee's independent music sounds a little different. Her latest single, I Wear My Roots Like a Medal, speaks to her identity, history, and resistance. Unlike Rowdy Baby, which is full of masala, I Wear My Roots Like a Medal is an English language song where Dee continuously tries to find her roots, only to realize they were within her this entire time. Dee joins me from India to talk about the curve from playback singing in India to writing and making her own songs with more of a global touch. Breaking perceptions while creating art, navigating a very visible social media presence, and having a faith in positive South Asian representation are just some of the things we touch upon in this beautiful, beautiful chat that I'm so excited to share with you today. So let's not waste any time and let's jump right in. Hi, Dee. Welcome to SBS Spice. Thank you so much for joining me. I've been listening to I Wear My Roots Like a Medal, and it seems to have a lot of personal in it. And you've said this song is dedicated to everyone who is in search of their roots. You were born in Jaffna, raised in Australia. You have a massive music career in India. So I'd love to start with you telling us a little bit about how your bicultural identity might have influenced your journey in music.
So like, obviously I moved very, very young and I grew up in Sydney, Western Sydney. So there's always like, you know, you're neither this or you're neither that kind of feeling. But also it's sort of a thing that you don't really acknowledge that much. It's not something that's like, not something that I always thought about, but subconsciously you kind of searched for, just belonging, I guess, you know, but it wasn't, I guess when I was younger, it wasn't something that I was constantly thinking about, but more so like, you feel lost sometimes, you know, and you sort of fit into what you're expected to be, or what, you know. So I think that kind of happens when you're when I was younger. I think that was that was something that I felt. But as I got older, like it makes you a lot stronger. I think you can face the world and with so much confidence, and also just you feel sort of empowered by your roots and by, you know, there's that feeling, right? So it's that. And also I think is just, you know, the circumstance that my family moved to Sydney is also kind of it's not like the ideal scenario, far from ideal, but, you know, but I think they've built such a beautiful life for us. And I think this is an immigrant story in a big way. Every immigrant family, they move to a country and they build a beautiful life. They try so hard. They work so hard to build a life for their kids. And it's that, it's a lot of that. And also like the whole, I think, generational trauma part of the song, I think, is just you carry so much of pain and grief and hurt that you don't even know you're carrying with you for such a long time until like it comes out in the most unexpected way. So you don't, these are things that you don't even know exist, but you're just carrying with you, you know. It's about sort of coming to terms with that, accepting that and working on that and sort of resolving all of these inner conflicts or whatever, even, you know, whatever you want to call it. So yeah.
Wow, beautiful. I mean, of course it sounds like the journey was within you for a very long time, but I'm wondering how long sort of the creation of the song was in the works for. When did that spark come that this is something that I really want to write and compose and put it out there so visually?
Interestingly, I started writing this about my grandma. So it was a song about my grandma. She has so much light in her. So I find that very inspiring. So I was like, I'm going to write a song about her. And then I wrote a little bit. I wrote like a one verse or like two verses. And then I just didn't think about it and I just kept it aside. And then I revisited the song after a really long time. And then I honestly don't know what happened, but like, you know, it was just at that point I was in that headspace, and I think I was also sort of resolved. I find it very difficult to write from a place of conflict. And I feel like I need to go through it and feel resolved in order to write about something. I do write sometimes when I'm conflicted, but I never end up liking it. I just think this is just crap. But like, you know, when I feel like I've sort of come to terms with things and I'm resolved, that's when I feel, I was in that headspace when I wrote this song as well. So so it was kind of like a little like a self hug, as well as like a hug to like literally everyone I know who's sort of been through similar things. So
the first time that I personally started following your music was after Enjoy Enjami, which was, you know, which very visually put you forward as well. And now I've been watching the video of your second single, you know, Where My Roots Like a Medal, and carries a really strong visual identity as well. So I'm wondering how involved are you in the conceptualization of your videos, or how personally attached do you feel?
I think a lot, because I think it's storytelling, right? So I think when you're telling a story, there's like, I think if the video is not making the song better, or if it's not adding to the narrative, I think that there's no point in having a video, I guess, you know. You put a lot of resources into making a video, so it's not just that, but it needs to add to the narrative, right? So it's storytelling at the end of the day, and like, the lyrics, you're telling a story. The video should tell a story. I think I'm always sort of thinking about that, and I do get involved a lot in it. But I think it's also really fun, and the people that I work with, I trust them so much. They're incredible at what they do. The director of this video, who also directed Enjoy Enjami, is incredible. Amit Anna. He's amazing. We get along so well, and we're pretty much always on the same page, actually. So it's really nice to be able to communicate and just have such a beautiful experience filming it. Like brainstorming everything, every part of it has been very, very fun. So, and very fun and therapeutic as well. So,
it sounds like a really special project with the way that you're talking about it. So, no, I'm glad. You're focusing more on creating independent music now after a few years of, you know, playback singing in India. I'm wondering, what's that journey looking like? You know, I'm talking to someone who has like over a billion views on YouTube, which is massive. So I'm guessing, like, how many layers do you have to shed to start fresh, to have like a new sound for your listeners, and to like start, you know, scratching the surface again? What's that process like?
So I think, like, for me, it's really weird because it doesn't feel like a transition per se for me, because I feel like I've always been doing this. I've always been making my own music, but I was doing playback as well. And I think with playback, I've always thought of it as something that I'm part of and not my music. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm singing, I'm playing a character, I'm not making the music, right? So there's always that, you know, there's like, I've always felt like this is something that I'm very honored to be part of, but, you know, it's something that I'm part of and not my music, right? So it never felt like a transition for me, right? And I've always been doing this as well. So it just, and I think even in playback, I felt I still was an independent artist. I was still doing my thing on the side, and these things were happening. So it didn't feel like much of a transition, but also like the only thing that I think is, I guess something that I think about is when you're working on an album, you're working on a body of work. The only thing that I sort of found challenging is like getting out of that and doing something else and coming back to that, because trying to get into that space, it takes a lot. It's kind of like, I think a lot of filmmakers, when they're writing a script, they don't watch any other movies, or they don't do anything else except write their script. A lot of them, not everybody, but a lot of them that I've spoken to kind of do that. And I think it's the same way with like working on an album as well. Like you're just sort of in that space. So that's the part that I think can be sometimes a transition or challenging, I guess. But like, yeah, but I think like overall it's just, it hasn't felt like a big transition. It's more of a transition for people who've listened to my music. People have listened to me before, like people who've listened to Enjoy and Jar Me, which is my debut independent single. And then they now hear I Wear My Roots Like a Medal. And they're like, like what's happening, you know? but I get why it's like a big difference for people listening. But like for me and for literally everybody around me, they've just heard this their whole life, you know? So not much of a transition in that aspect, but like, yeah. Sorry, I'm blabbering a lot.
No, not at all. I'm loving this.
I'm so sorry. I feel like I just need to stop talking a little bit.
No, that was great. I mean, it's always really nice to hear because, you know, obviously we have a certain perception of an artist, you know, and especially when it comes to like the sonic, because we're listening to them, we're hearing them most of the time. And so definitely I think people have a certain idea about the artist that they're listening to. And when it doesn't feel like a transition for you, for a lot of listeners, it might feel like one. So I think that's an interesting like trajectory to navigate as well.
It's very interesting. I find it very, very interesting as well. And it's been liberating for me just having them out. That's kind of like that's a beautiful feeling. So I think it's just kind of like getting things off your shoulder. Like it just feels like they're physically, you know, like weighing you when you have it on you. And when you put it out, it just feels very amazing. So,
yeah. Wow. Just staying on your like on your work process a bit, because I'm really curious. I'm wondering, how do you start something? Like do you start with a melody, a lyric, an emotion? Like as an artist, what's the lead that you tend to follow before creating something new?
So it really depends on the song, on like the song or what it is. I don't think there's ever been one thing that I do every single time. So usually there's some songs that I've written on my album that I wrote like poetry and then went and made the song and melody and, you know, all of that stuff. Sometimes it's been for Can't You Stay, which was my first single. It sort of happened like together. So I started playing a chord progression and then it starts with that. And then it starts with just like the melody and then just like random words. And then those random words start making sense. So, and then it comes out like you're just like whatever you're feeling just comes out and you don't know. And then you look back and you're like, what? I did that? Why did I do that? so it's like that. So it's just, you know, and sometimes like there's a beat and then I decide to like do something on the beat. So there's also that. So it just depends on the song and just anything. But usually it's like, for me, the most common process is kind of like starting with chord progression and sort of singing over that, and just, which is like, I guess, the classic way of songwriting in a sense. Like, I think it really depends. It just depends on, like, you don't know where inspiration comes from, right? It's just there. There's a level of excitement that's always there that, you know, gets you going.
No, fully. Like, I'm with you. I feel like also excitement is the best word for it. Like, sometimes you just have an idea and everything starts falling in place and it's just a very grounded feeling that, okay, something that I've felt is like an actual asset, something I can listen to, I can watch. It's a feeling that I'm sharing with other people. On that note, before you release something, before you put out something, what's running through your mind? Is the expectation like, I really hope this lands exactly how I want it to land? Or are you also excited by the surprise that you might get from the audience? Like, oh, I didn't think it would land in this way, but huh, what a strange reaction, which I'm, you know, sort of loving.
Yeah, I think it's like that, actually. I think for me, I'm usually just very excited and nervous. That's like that mixture of that feeling. But I'm like, you know, just really happy to have it out. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's what I usually feel, because I'm like, I'm so happy. I just want to share it. Like, I'm ready to share it. So, you know, there's no expectation. I think it's just, I just want to share it with people. And it's been in my computer for so long and I just want it to be out and find its own life and whatever. Right. So, yeah, so I think that's what I feel usually, excitement and nervous. Like, I feel nervous and excited.
Yeah, fair. I was born and raised in India, and I came to Australia, I think, 6-7 years ago. And it was, even then, it was not, you know, you could literally count like South Asian women in the Australian music scene. And I've personally seen it expand and grow. And, you know, I think there's a new life with like younger artists and younger women taking up music as a career. Do you envision it evolving over the next few years? Like, the diaspora is growing massively here. And yeah, younger kids are choosing arts more and more. What kind of sound or, you know, visual identity do you envision Australian scene have from the South Asian community and especially women?
I think, like, recently I've been having a lot of conversations with, like, labels and, you know, and so many people are so excited about South Asian music. South Asian music, South Asian stories, they want new stories, they want new perspectives and authentic representation as well, I think, is, like, you know, something that people are looking for now. I think because we live in that time now, I think it's just, it opens a lot of doors for us, like, it opens a lot more doors for us. And you know, when we speak to them, they're very particular about this. They're like, oh, you know, we love this. It's also like to a point where I don't think it's like you're being pigeonholed either. You're just sort of, it's still, I think, in a way that they just want to see what they think is Indian music, but just a new perspective in pop music, basically, I think. And I think that's a very exciting time to be in. I think that's really nice. And this probably wasn't the case 10 years ago, you know. It's very rare, very, very rare. I can think of like two people, you know. So I think it's amazing that that's sort of happening now, you know. And like, so I think I'm really excited about that. Obviously, there's always a long way to go. But like, you know, I think it's an amazing thing. So I really think that's very exciting. So, yeah.
Yeah. And has to start somewhere, right? Like, for it to finesse itself and find its new space. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it feels very genuine. It feels very like there's a genuine interest and curiosity, I think, like to see different things on different stories, different perspectives. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, 100%. And as you said, long way to go. Just in the morning, I was like searching for sample music for like one of our Diwali podcasts. And I was like, what is this? Is this Middle Eastern? Is this like what?
You know,
just a bunch of like keywords. And I'm like, oh my God, this sound is really making me like very anxious because no one is playing it at their home. Like this is, no one's hitting play on this. So I don't know how it becomes part of our like sample music libraries. And then I started thinking about other audio producers or people who make podcasts and they search for Indian music and a plethora of very, very like sitar all the time, you know, comes up.
Yeah, it's kind of like a stereotype, you know, it is a stereotype of, and I think it's so hard because India has such diverse music. Like, you know, you cannot categorize India into anything because it's such a, like, there's someone representing this, there's a group to represent something. There's always like there's such a, you know, like, so I think like anytime someone's like you can't define India in like one thing, like, you know, it's very difficult, very, very, very difficult. So it's just really, yeah, it's funny when you see that.
It's like, oh, the diversity, the range of sound is like impeccable, and yeah, sometimes I think haven't been able to capture as of yet, but you know, I have faith.
Same. I think so too. I think like now's the time. So I feel very hopeful.
And also at the same time, I think things are becoming more and more borderless. There's social media, there's, you know, the language of the internet, of course. And I don't think you necessarily have to be in practicing in one part of the world for your music to not travel and not travel as rapidly as it can now. So I'm wondering with you and your like digital footprint, do you sometimes also feel that you're very like exposed and, you know, people have a lot to say about your work that might be really personal? How do you navigate that as an artist? Just the reality of being an artist that has to be on socials like a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think people do, I guess, have, I think when you put anything out in public, I think there's a lot of opinions, right? So I think it's just, you know, if it's something that you think will be helpful to you, I take it. If it's not helpful to me, or if it's just kind of harassing, then, you know, completely, yeah, ignore it. Because also, you really don't know what people are going through and what's making them say things that they're saying. So I just see it that way and I just move on with my life and whatever I'm doing. So, you know, so if it's constructive, because how do you know if something's constructive, right? But just like, you know, if it feels helpful and if it feels very, you know, if it's like something that you think you can work on, then you take that in. You know, so I think that's cool. But you know, if it's like straight up harassment, then you just ignore it. I think there's like nothing for you to like, yeah, why would you take that in? So, because you really don't know what people are going through, why they say these things and what they're dealing with. But social media is such a fun thing. It's such a beautiful thing. And we're so lucky to have like, there's obviously the bad side to it as well. But for the big part, I think like you can, you know, people can really share their music and it can reach different parts of the world and without relying on anyone else except yourself. So I think that's a cool thing.
100%. I definitely catch your drift. I mean, as a journalist, of course, I'm a very big believer in critique. And I feel like, you know, any work that's out in the public, of course, we should be able to independently talk about it. But at the same time, it's you also have to protect yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also just like, you know, like even for us, when we look at a work, I think like it's important. Like it is like, you know, you wouldn't like say something that's mean, you know, like you would try to be like, I think that's just being kind, I guess. Like you're being everyone has a ripping, people can not like your song, you know, that's totally fine. That's how it should be, right? There'll be people who like it, there'll be people who don't like it. So I think that's reality. So I think it's just about just understanding and accepting that. And if it's a little too aggressive in the way that they're putting their opinions forward, then you can ignore it. So that's how I see it. So
no, wonderful. I mean, yeah, honesty without empathy is just cruelty. So you obviously have to
exactly.
What kind of intention it's coming with. So Dee,
yeah,
if you could go back to the Dee who first started music to the Dee you are now, what would you kind of say to her, or what kind of advice would you give her about the journey ahead? Maybe you know better now as an artist, and you know, maybe you've unlearned a few things as well. What kind of communication do you think you'll be having with your younger artist self?
I think I'll just tell it to not be so, not to overthink so much. Like, you know, just I think I'm an overthinker. So as a kid, definitely. So maybe not overthink and don't be scared. Just like, you know, but to be fair, like, I think I have, I do go through phases of overthinking and being scared, but I think like, I've come out of it too. So I think, so whatever happened the best way. So I wouldn't, I guess, change anything. I have no regrets, but I would just say you spent a lot of time feeling very, you know, like overthinking and just feeling very insecure as well sometimes, you know. So I think I would say, yeah, just don't think about that stuff, you know.
Perfect. It's a beautiful note to wrap this up on, Dee. Thank you so, so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. Sorry, I'm such a yapper. Like,
no, we love yappers. Like, this is this is where we have the best time, you know. We want to have like a chat with the person, you know, and not just like a Q&A. So no, don't worry about it at all. I had the best time.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And that was Dee. Thank you so much for listening. You can find SBS Spice wherever you find your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at SBS Spice for more. We will be back with more Chilies in the Pod. Until next time.